And welcome to Outbeat Radio here on KRCB FM 91. I am Jeff Basham here tonight with my co-host Red Maralia. Our show tonight is called Outbeat Now. We are part of the Outbeat Radio series of programs that airs at 8 p.m. each and every Sunday. You can listen to Outbeat Radio on demand on the web, all of our past shows at www.outbeatradio.org. Tonight on Outbeat Now, I'll be talking to Tina Cocker, who is an attorney specializing in same-sex family law. She works out of an office in Santa Rosa. And Greg, what do you have up on Outbeat Youth tonight?
Well, in the Outbeat Youth segment tonight, we're going to start out by meeting a really amazing young man that I ran into at the Matthew Shepard Foundation annual gala in Denver, Connor Norton. He's a college student who was honored by the foundation for his LGBT activism work. He was given the Spirit of Matthew Award. And then we're going to continue with our Campus Pride National Voices in Action Spotlight series. We'll be talking with Anna Agnes, who is an out bisexual college athlete. She'll be telling us about the amazing work she's doing to combat homophobia in college athletic programs. She's really quite an amazing woman. But all of this will be coming up right after your Outbeat News for this Sunday, October 28th, 2012. In a story we've been following here on Outbeat News, two Kentucky men were found not guilty Wednesday in the first case to be prosecuted charging a violation of the sexual orientation section of the federal hate crime law expanded in 2009. Cousins Anthony Ray Jenkins and David Jason Jenkins were found guilty of kidnapping in the 2011 attack on Kevin Pennington, who is gay, but were acquitted on federal hate crime charges. Federal prosecutors had argued that the Jenkins planned to kidnap, beat, and kill Pennington because of his sexual orientation. Defense attorneys argued the dispute happened because of a drug deal turned sour. Attorney Willis Coffey suggested that Pennington's allegations were motivated by a political agenda. The Jenkins are scheduled to be sentenced in February for the kidnapping conviction. As Marylanders prepare to go to the polls on November 6th to decide the fate of the marriage equality bill, a local pastor condemned those in same-sex marriages as well as their supporters to death. The Reverend Robert Anderson of the Colonial Baptist Church said, quote, "Those who practice such things are worthy of death. If we don't vote against it, then we are approving these things that are worthy of death." Anderson refused to back down from his statements, telling NBC Washington they come from the Bible. He added that those supporting same-sex marriage should also be sent to the gallows. And in sharp contrast, President Obama on Thursday officially endorsed Washington's Referendum 74, which would affirm marriage equality in the Evergreen State. According to Paul Bell, press secretary for Obama's reelection efforts in the northwestern state, while the president does not weigh in on every single ballot measure in every state, the president believes in treating everyone fairly and equally with dignity and respect. Washington's same-sex marriage law would treat all Washington couples equally, and that is why the president supports the vote to approve Referendum 74. And here in California, Equality California's board of directors announced their new pick for an executive director. John O'Connor is a seasoned nonprofit leader with deep ties in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community and will begin serving as executive director of Equality California and Equality California Institute on December 3rd. It's no secret that Equality California is coming off a long transition, and John's extensive experience leading nonprofits through turbulence and into solvency and stability made him the ideal candidate. Most recently, working as executive director of the LGBT Community Center of the Desert, he brought in new staff, established a new counseling center, and forged important partnerships with area schools to introduce anti-bullying and suicide prevention workshops while overseeing substantial budget growth and returning the organization to solvency. And here locally, Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, is looking for volunteers to help out with this year's Dining Out for Life, scheduled for Thursday, November 29th. Dining Out for Life has become their most successful fundraising event, and like every fundraising event, it requires an enormous amount of volunteers. Ambassadors are currently needed to help fill an assigned restaurant, invite guests to the event, greet guests during the event, and collect donations from diners at the restaurant. Last year, Food for Thought collected $130,000, $65,000 of which was left in donation envelopes during the evening. You can learn more about how to get involved by going to their website at fftfoodbank.org. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, October 30th, and every Tuesday from 1 to 4 p.m., rapid HIV testing is offered at Face-to-Face, Sonoma County AIDS Network at 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday at 7 p.m., Out and About, a social group for LGBT folks and their friends, will gather at Aroma Roasters in Railroad Square. And on Thursday, November 1st, from 7 to 9 p.m., the Men for Men support group will meet at the Marin AIDS Project, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. On Saturday, November 3rd, at 6 p.m., Out and About will again gather for dinner at the Cafe Europe Restaurant, 104 Calistoga Road in Santa Rosa. And also on Saturday, all day, Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank Drive, will be available to collect non-perishable food and other items at the Safeway on Mendocino, Oliver's in Rincon Valley, and the Pacific Market in Sebastopol. And finally, on Sunday, November 4th at 7:30 p.m., PFLAG's Napa Support Group will meet at the Covenant Presbyterian Church, 1226 Salvador Avenue in Napa. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia.
And welcome back to Outbeat Radio here on KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. I am Jeff Bashram, one of your hosts for this evening. And I am here with Tina Cocker. Good evening, Tina.
Good evening.
Tina is an attorney specializing in same-sex family law. She works for Terry Family Law in Santa Rosa. And we'll be giving her contact information in a little bit. Welcome. I'm glad you're here with us to talk about same-sex family law issues.
Thank you for having me. A topic
that we've had on the air before, but I don't think it was covered with the depth and thoroughness that you have. So thank you. So I'd like to talk a little bit first about your personal introduction so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit. And can you tell us a little bit about the law firm that you worked with?
Oh, sure. I originally started in Tennessee, where I went to Vanderbilt University and then University of San Francisco for law school. And I am currently at Terry Family Law with a wonderful attorney, Carla Boyd Terry, who's been practicing in Santa Rosa for many years. And we have a family law practice and do specialize in domestic partnerships and same-sex issues that affect same-sex couples.
Wonderful, wonderful. And what brought you to Santa Rosa from the great state of Tennessee?
First for law school, and I practiced in Sacramento for some years doing family law. I'm domestic partnered and luckily legally married to my wife, Ashley.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we have four-year-old twins. We moved to Santa Rosa not only because it's such a beautiful area to live in, but also because my wonderful in-laws live here as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. So we are lucky to have you tonight, and I believe we're going to have you on again next month, hopefully, if it works out in your schedule. So this will be a two-part series for our listeners out there. We're going to talk tonight about same-sex marriage dissolution or divorce, and also about some parentage and adoption issues, and we'll see how far we get down the list, and maybe other topics. And Greg, you're welcome to chime in here if you have anything to add or any questions for Tina. So, Tina, let's go ahead and talk about the reason that you wanted to come on there. Mm-hmm. You emailed me and you proposed this program.
Yes, I noticed that there, despite the fact that domestic partnerships have been law in California for some years now, there is not a lot of education in the community about what that really means. We did have marriage for a brief moment. However, domestic partnerships and what the rights and responsibilities are that come with that are not widely known. It's very important for people to know that if they enter into a domestic partnership or a marriage in another state and come here and have the same benefits and rights that we have as domestic partners, that the rights and obligations that come along with it are quite serious. A lot of couples realize this when divorce happens. The issues that arise are issues regarding child custody and visitation, child support, spousal support. Surprisingly to me, there are quite a few couples that still don't realize that there is a spousal support obligation between the domestic partners after the dissolution is final.
So it's a very much a legal contract, just like marriage.
Absolutely. And property division is also a very big deal. And because we are not treated federally the same way that that opposite sex couples are treated, the issues that arise in divorce proceedings are very unique to the LGBT community. For example, residency requirements are different here, as well as one big issue is spousal support. In an opposite sex couple situation, spousal support is taxable to the recipient and deductible to the payor. And when you're talking about IRS rules, the Internal Revenue Code that applies to those opposite sex couples, it doesn't necessarily apply the same way to same-sex couples. So their question is, well, is it deductible? Is it taxable? And which rules apply and which rules don't apply.
So all of that definitely complicates the process.
Absolutely. Side agreements are made oftentimes that can't be lodged with the court because we don't really know if they would be recognized by the federal government.
Sure. So that's the importance of getting same-sex marriage legally recognized federally as a long-term goal.
Absolutely.
Certainly, but more a goal that we'd like to get in California, too, of course.
Absolutely. With the passage of the laws regarding requiring us now to report half of community property income on our taxes, creates a really a cost prohibitive situation for many couples having to prepare a California return and then prepare a dummy federal return to figure out how to separate community property. And in addition to that, it's complicated by the fact that many people at the IRS don't know how to deal with our state and how to deal with that situation. Yeah. And a lot of our couples are having to pay a CPA more money than they would otherwise.
And I'm sure that there's very few CPAs out there who really understand the process like you do.
That's true. And
you know, not that you're a CPA, but you know that you do understand the legalities behind it.
The issues that it raises, yes. I'm very aware. And I'm part of an LGBT study group that involves estate planners, family law attorneys, and CPAs, just so that we can have a think tank to figure out how best do we deal with this since we don't have rules in place.
So there might be some listeners out there with some questions as to or a knowledge that certain things are pending before the Supreme Court regarding Prop 8. And so can you just jump back a second and talk a little bit about what exactly is pending before the Supreme Court and what the outcomes might be and what the effects of those outcomes are?
Well, the main two issues before the Supreme Court is Proposition 8 in California and whether or not the Ninth Circuit's decision striking down Proposition 8 will be reviewed or whether it will not be reviewed by the Supreme Court, as well as the slew of DOMA cases. Eight different courts have struck DOMA down, claiming that it is unconstitutional. So these are two very big issues that are completely interrelated that the Supreme Court may take up. And at this point, we haven't heard anything from the court as to whether these cases are on the list. If they were to and uphold the Ninth Circuit's decision in Prop 8, that means that Prop 8 would go away and couples could get married legally in California.
Do you know or have any idea of how quickly that would happen after that decision was made?
There would be a period of time that the California municipalities and cities would have to wait before that could happen. It would not be the day of the decision, that's for sure.
Okay.
In the DOMA cases, if DOMA were struck down, that would really alleviate a lot of problems that we're having.
Of course.
including this taxation issue that I've already mentioned.
Sure. So let's move on into, well, actually, I'll mention that, you know, since hopefully you'll be back with us next month, hopefully we'll have something from the Supreme Court to talk about.
Exactly.
I know when we originally talked about doing this interview, we said, oh, well, we'll talk about whatever the Supreme Court decision is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they didn't oblige us.
Unfortunately, so.
So we'll move on into talking about same-sex dissolution a little bit more than we already have addressed the taxation issue of community property.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just let you take it from there.
Oh, sure.
Whatever your next idea is.
Yeah, the highlights. So I did want to touch on the fact that California has become an easier state to dissolve our same-sex unions. We do allow for, obviously, the dissolution of domestic partnerships performed here. Any same-sex marriage that was validly performed anywhere before Prop 8 was passed in 2008, those can be dissolved here. Also, any same-sex marriage that was validly performed outside of California after Prop 8 was passed, as well as any other non-marital relationships, such as civil unions, those types of relationships can be dissolved here.
And is that a law that was passed after Prop 8?
That's correct.
Okay.
It was some cleanup legislation because they realized, well, if I get married in another state and it's not recognized here, then where do I go to dissolve my union?
Sure.
So let me just ask a quick question, mm-hmm. because I know a lot of couples in California, like Tony and I did, got married in Canada and another country. Mm-hmm. How does California regard marriages, either straight or same-sex, coming into California from other countries?
It depends on when that union was entered into. If it was entered into when California had marriages legally available, those marriages are recognized as marriages. As far as after Prop 8 was passed, if you do go get married in Massachusetts, let's say, and then you come here, you're only going to get recognition up to the level of domestic partnership. However, the rights and responsibilities are substantially the same.
Sure. And so to dissolve those, I know at one time you had to be a resident. If you got married in Canada, you had to be a resident of Canada if you had to dissolve your marriage. If I understand you correctly, California can now do that.
That's correct. You don't have that same residency requirement for depending on if it was before or after Prop 8. If you were legally registered here as domestic partners and you were trying to dissolve here, you are still subject to the residency requirement where you have to have lived in California for 6 months and 3 months of the county that you're trying to dissolve in.
Okay.
Okay. And so we'll talk a little bit now about, let's move into talking about child custody, child support, the intricacies that come into same-sex domestic partnerships around that.
Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, for child custody and child support issues specifically, I don't find a huge difference between the opposite-sex couples that I help and the same-sex couples that I help. It's not a surprise to me that these issues are pervasive and affect families in the same way. When you have an intact two-parent household that is breaking up, the kids are going through the same exact experiences
sure.
That they're going through, whether it be a mom and a dad or a mom and a mom.
Sure. Or a dad and a dad.
Or a dad and a dad, yes, absolutely.
So, and of course, there's been those things out there in the current political campaigns that are going on that seem to indicate there was one quote that said something like, "Oh, I didn't know you had families," and that just kind of really hit me and comes up now when we're talking that our families really are families, and we, you know, and legally and everything, you know, we have the same with domestic partnership. We have the same rights and responsibilities and everything.
And we do create families in the same way that opposite-sex couples create families. And in a way, there's a lot of contemplation, a lot more contemplation that goes into creating a family for couples like us because we do actively have to go out and talk about how do we bring this child into the world and what does it really mean to bring this child into the world and can we handle it? Can we take care of it? All of those issues get discussed prior to that happening.
Exactly.
In most cases.
Where hopefully it would happen in an opposite-sex couple, but not always.
Exactly.
Certainly. So that makes a great segue into talking more about those topics, about parentage, about adoption, about surrogacy. Mm-hmm. You know, can you address that a little bit?
Yes, and this is an issue that is close to my heart because I've gone through it myself. And,
sure.
It's important to know that in California, parentage is automatic if the child is a child of the domestic partnership. If you are a domestic partner and you have a child within that, after the registration, that child is your child, whether it's your biological child or not. And that is the presumption that happens. Sure, it can be rebutted in certain circumstances, but By and large, that is the presumption. For any children that are born prior to the registration of the domestic partnership, the court would look at whether the non-biological parent held the child out as their own, received the child into her home. Those types of factors are looked into, and then the presumption applies. The presumption could be rebutted by another parent that's vying for recognition, but that would be more difficult if the non-biological parent participated in the conception with the understanding that she's going to be the parent and voluntarily assumed responsibility for the child. So the timing of when the child comes into the relationship is very important.
So how does a situation where two men were in a relationship and then employed surrogacy to have, but they don't necessarily know which of them is the biological father? Is that how does that enter into this?
That's an interesting situation. I haven't heard that before. And I'm sure it happens. Well, there are two different types of surrogacy. There's traditional and gestational. Mm-hmm. Traditional is where one of the men is biologically connected to that child, mm-hmm. and the egg is provided by the surrogate. In a gestational surrogacy, there's a donor of the egg.
Yeah.
In that situation that you suggest, I would imagine that some sort of paternity test should happen.
Yeah.
Because the biological parent will automatically be a parent.
Sure.
It's the non-biological parent that we need to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in a traditional surrogacy situation, it would be important to bring a paternity action, have the biological father figured out prior to the child's birth, and then after the birth, the non-bio dad should adopt that child.
Okay.
In a gestational situation, it would be important to bring a legal action during the pregnancy, establish that both intended parents are intended to be the legal parents of the child and that the surrogate is not.
Okay.
And that protects also the surrogate from being financially responsible for the child and then allows both intended parents to go on the birth certificate and avoids all of the court proceedings after that. And actually, since we're on the topic of surrogacy, AB 1217 just went into, was signed into law in September of this year, and it makes a little bit, it's a little bit more stringent now for surrogacy agreements. The land of surrogacy has been very fluid and unregulated for many years, and oftentimes one company is dealing with the intended parents as well as the surrogate. And now the law, which I think is for the better, the law requires that the intended parents have a separate counsel by a separate attorney, and the surrogate has separate counsel by a separate attorney, so that everybody knows what their rights are before they even start the process.
So it's a very
huge.
Yeah, so it's a very contractual agreement and everything.
And
like
every
that.
Party knows what they're getting into before exactly. they actually conceive that child.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you that mm-hmm. that's a good thing.
Yes.
So this, I mean, this really sounds like the best approach is to sit down with an attorney and plan all this out if you're planning on any type of development of a family, is to really lay all this out and know what your rights are well ahead of time.
Absolutely. And it's important, I think, and for me, because I did adopt the two children, that they're not my biological children, and I adopted them. And the presumption applied to me because I was not only domestically partnered, which is still a mouthful, but I was also legally married when those children were born. And so the presumption does apply to me. Those are my children.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were to travel out of state and that something were to happen, we had a car
sure.
accident,
yeah.
who's to say that they're not, you know, that they're going to let me into that hospital room to see those children?
Yeah.
So, and what if we were to move, even though the great state of California, I'm not moving,
yeah.
but those issues are very important to think about. So if you have a legal adoption, granted, you have to carry those papers around with you all the time, but if you have a legal adoption, that's going to take you much further.
Sure.
And there's been a question of whether a judgment of parentage is the way to go or a legal adoption. The end result is you have a legal order from the state of California saying that you are the parent of that child. But
sure.
the consensus right now between NCLR, Lambda Legal, and all of the big organizations
mm-hmm.
is to recommend adoption and going through the adoption process, which is fairly simple, actually, especially here in Sonoma County.
You brought up something that I think is really important to talk about a little bit, and that is when a couple goes out of state. I know that Tony and I have run into some situations where we are in another state and we've had to prove that we're married.
Mm.
You know, you can't just say, well, we're married and have that accepted. What do you recommend that couples travel with in terms of documentation to show that they are married and or in the case of having mm-hmm. children that they have lawful custody of those kids.
I have heard of families physically carrying around those orders and paperwork that shows those things. I've heard of people shrinking them down and laminating them so they just live in the glove box. And he points to his wallet. yeah, I have actually heard of that. And now there is, although I'm not affiliated with DocuBank, but I've heard of DocuBank where all of these papers, your will, your healthcare directive, your trust documents, those types of things are actually in a database, and mm-hmm. you carry around a little card that people can access the database if they need to. So at this point, this is what we're stuck with, is carrying our papers around with us, unfortunately.
So do you recommend that as a matter of business?
I would, absolutely.
And another solution to that may be using an encrypted flash drive of some type, USB drive, you know, that you keep on your keys. You know, they make them really small now. Of course, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff you want to make sure is highly encrypted when you put it on there. Then, you know, but then you always have it with you and can simply go to a computer and print it out if you needed it.
Exactly.
So it's always with you in that regard. I know that there's some health organizations that have been able to convert all their medical records, and you just go there and you can get a drive. And before you go, I did this myself before I went on a cruise, and I was going out of the country. I mm-hmm. carried in my backpack all of my medical records just on a USB drive. You know, all I needed was a password. So, and then if I was incapacitated, there is a way that they can get into mm-hmm. it anyway. So,
it is the smartest way to travel.
Exactly. Exactly. So, if someone were wanting to contact you that's listening now and has any questions regarding marriage, domestic partnership, adoption, all these things that we've talked about, how is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Just give us a phone call. The number is 707-575-7765.
That's 707-575-7765, and that's for Terry Family Law in Santa Rosa,
correct? That's correct.
And you are Tina Cocker. Thank you very much for being with us tonight, Tina. And you will be with us next month, if all works out well. And I think we're going to talk about some senior issues.
Yes.
Okay. And so can you just give us a quick two-minute overview mm-hmm. of what our listeners can look forward to next month?
One issue we were talking about was the issue of Social Security benefits. These are available to people upon retirement, upon disability, and upon death. And one huge issue, actually I'll touch on 2 points. One point that right now, because we're not recognized federally, same-sex couples, Social Security benefits are not available, that are available equally to spouses. And the word spouse I put in quotes because it only applies to opposite-sex couples at this point. So per GLAAD's recommendation, go ahead and apply for those Social Security benefits, even though you will be denied, because if DOMA goes away and your application is pending or you're on appeal, you can get benefits retroactively to your application, the date of application. So even though you'll be denied, go ahead and apply. And also, adoption is very, very important because benefits that are available through Social Security to children are... You have to have a legal recognition between the parent and that child, which is another reason why we highly recommend adoption for Social Security benefits, too.
Wonderful. And we're going to talk about both of those topics and more in more detail next month. And that will be right here the fourth Sunday on Outbeat Now. Again, we're part of the Outbeat Radio family of programs that airs every Sunday at 8 o'clock right here on KRCB. And tonight we've been talking with Tina Cocker. She works for Terry Family Law in Santa Rosa. That's T-E-R-R-E. You can contact them at 707-575-7765. And they are a law firm that specializes in same-sex family law. And this is Outbeat Radio, KRCB FM Santa Rosa.
We drop like falling stars, bare feet in cable cars, and we don't know who we are, but we're not trying to find out. We stare up at the sun, look at the things we've done, and my heart is on the run, and it's not gonna stop now. Oh, but sometimes I wanna go home. 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 Yeah. Doubts like skin, look at the mess we're in, and I know somebody's gotta win, but I'm not trying to win now. Oh, but sometimes I wanna go home. Sometimes I wanna go home. Sometimes I wanna go home. Scars, scared that we've come this far, and we don't know who we are, we're afraid to find out. Oh, but sometimes I want to go home. Sometimes I want to go home. Sometimes I want to go home. Sometimes I wanna 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 go home.
That was local singer and songwriter Bobby Joe Valentine with one of his latest hits, Home, from his new CD of the same title, released just this month. You can find all of the music from Bobby Joe Valentine on iTunes. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Windsor, Santa Rosa. It's time now for this month's Outbeat Youth segment.
Please put my soul up to love. I am so, so alive.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about LGBT youth here in the North Bay and beyond. And we're a regular part of Outbeat Now here on the fourth Sunday of every month. Tonight, we continue with our Campus Pride National Voice in Action Spotlight Series with special guest Anna Agnes, who will be talking about LGBT issues in college athletic programs. But first, I'd like to introduce you to an amazing young man I met this last month while attending the Matthew Shepard Foundation annual gala in Colorado. His name is Connor Norton, and he was honored that night with the Spirit of Matthew Award for his LGBT activism at school. And I had a chance to talk with Connor before the big event. Here's what he had to say. Connor, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pretty exciting night here in Denver. You're getting the Spirit of Matthew Award. Tell us about where you're going to school and maybe give us a little bit of background on how this all came about.
Sure. Well, I go to school at Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia. I was nominated by my friend Don King. He's a big time ally and mentor for me back in Norfolk, and he basically nominated me for all the work that I've done in Norfolk for the Hampton Roads LGBT community. And so then Greg called me about, I guess, a month or so now ago and told me, "Oh, did you know you were nominated?" I said, "Yeah." And then he said, "Oh, well, did you know that you won?" I was like, "No." And just since then, it's just been really crazy getting to fly out here and come to Denver. And I've never been this far away from home, so it's been a new experience kind of getting out there and seeing other LGBT organizations and, you know, how similar and different we are wherever we are. So it's been fun.
So give us a sense of some of the work you've done that's behind this award.
Sure. Well, I am a longtime volunteer at the LGBT Center of Hampton Roads. I've volunteered there since we opened 2 years ago now. I'm also on the advisory board for ODU Gay Cultural Studies, which is a department that works to establish LGBTQ study units and classes and professors at our university. I'm 2-year president of our LGBT organization, ODU Out. I'm also founder and executive director of the Reel It Out Queer Film Festival in Hampton Roads. It's our first annual queer film festival that is starting in March. I am also the college student representative for Harbor, which is the LGBTQ Hampton Roads business outreach organization, which works to support and network friendly LGBTQ businesses across the Hampton Roads area. And I was also founder and president of my Gay Straight Alliance back in high school for my 4 years. So,
holy cow, how do you have time for school?
people always ask me that. I have it did take me a little while to balance both of them. It was pretty difficult at first, but at the time, our LGBT organization, our president had graduated, and we didn't have anybody that could run the organization, so we had nobody else to step up but me. And luckily, with that passion and just going forward with it, it helped balance all out in its own, which was lucky. But I've been working hard, making sure to keep my grades up. I'm a double major in theater and business with a minor in education and hopefully queer theory once we get it established. Yeah, I've just been making sure to stay focused on my classes. We always talk about how school is always your first objective, no matter what we do for volunteer work. And it's been paying off for me so far in the long run. It's been great opportunities and still kept me with my good grades. So,
awesome. So give us a sense of how big the LGBT community is at your college.
At our college, it's not necessarily huge, but it's very active. We have a lot of faculty and students and teachers that are all very supportive and behind us. ODU Out itself has about almost 100 members now, and the members are diverse amongst students as well as faculty, staff, the higher-ups of the university, our vice president, the dean of student affairs. All of them are incredibly supportive to LGBTQ issues. There's also another organization that we work with called ODU Safe Space, which works to educate and promote a safe and living and learning environment for the students and the staff. They do a training session with us to educate staff as well as students about LGBTQ issues in the classroom. So that way, when students come to them or have issues like that or that are LGBTQ related, that they can come to someone who understands and is able to help them. So there's a really big and active community there, and it's been a great home for me being at ODU. I was always concerned about what the LGBTQ climate would be like at the university I went to, and luckily, even though there wasn't one that I much saw when I first arrived, there's been one that's really grown since then. So,
fantastic. So when you were thinking about going to college, did you seek out this college because it had a visible LGBT community, or did you discover that after you got there?
I actually found it after I got there. I was concerned for a while about what the LGBT climate would be like. I'd heard, you know, back when I was younger, I always had the horror stories of, you know, having a roommate that would be unaccepting or unloving or wouldn't appreciate or approve of LGBTQ people. But when it came to getting ready for college, my thoughts were, in the future and in the real world, you don't get to pick and choose who you get to socialize with, who you get to be with. You're going to be with some people who accept you. You're going to be with some people who don't. And all you can really do is just kind of assimilate into that community. Be vibrant, be proud of your community, but still be accepting of other people's beliefs. And luckily, it paid off for me when I got to ODU. And then as I wanted to form a more vibrant LGBT community, it just kind of formed on its own.
So where do you get your motivation from? I mean, I guess maybe the first question should be, how long have you been out?
Well, I've been out since my freshman year of high school, so 6 years almost. When I was coming out, I didn't have a very vibrant community to lean on. Since I was growing up, I never knew, you know, who would accept me, what would accept me, you know, what I could do, what I could say. And so I never even really knew that I was gay or that I was homosexual. You know, I never knew all these terms. And so when I came to high school, I went to the Governor's School for the Arts and did theater there. And my theater teacher, Ricardo Melendez, said that I should read a play. And we always read plays in his class drama lit, and this play he wanted me specifically to read, and it was called The Laramie Project. It was my first experience ever hearing and reading a story that had to do with somebody LGBT, but more importantly, that there was people and voices that approved of this LGBT youth and disapproved of the treatment that he got. And so it was the first time that I heard the terms, the first times that I heard of someone kind of not necessarily coming out on the upper side of this situation, but of being loved and accepted by his family and his friends and people in the community around him. And so it was the first thing that ever gave me that experience to, you know, learn that if you want to have a community that accepts and loves you, if you fight for it, if you work for it, it'll happen. And so that's what I've always done since I was in high school and now in ODU. You know, if I want a vibrant and proud community to be around me and surround me and love me, then I got to fight for it.
Very good. Well, congratulations to you. It sounds like you're very deserving of the award and making a huge difference at your school.
Thank you so much. I'm incredibly honored and I'm very excited.
You can hear Connor's presentation on our website at outbeatyouth.com. Just click on show notes at the top of the page. Now to our Campus Pride National Voice in Action Spotlight Series. You know, coming out in an athletic program in college or even in the professional sports world is still very challenging for many. But our guest tonight is out, and she's doing a lot of work to make it easier for college athletes to be themselves while competing on a sports team. Anna Ogonis is a former NCAA track and cross-country athlete for the University of Pennsylvania, and she's joining us tonight from the East Coast via Skype. Anna, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Greg.
Well, it's great to have you on. And let's start out by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience in high school and college as an athlete who happens to be bisexual.
Sure. So I came out when I was a junior in high school. I was 16 years old and brought my girlfriend to prom. It was definitely a difficult, but I think rewarding experience coming out at that age in a school where really no one was out. And I, you know, slowly came out to family and friends. But the one place I wasn't comfortable being completely out about dating a girl at the time was my track team. I couldn't really say why that space didn't feel safe to me. Still, you know, I'm sort of grappling with, you know, why I wasn't out on my team then. But I knew that I wanted to run track in college, and I knew that I wanted to be out by the time I got to college everywhere on my team as well. So I chose the University of Pennsylvania because when I went on my recruiting visit, it felt like a place where I could really be out and that I would have allies. And so when I got to Penn, I actually started dating someone new pretty quickly that I got there, and it made it, I think, easier having a girlfriend soon into college to come out, starting slowly with a couple of allies on the team that I really trusted. And, you know, I had a really positive experience with my team. But, you know, the work that we do with Go Athletes, the LGBT student organization, is there because I don't think that everyone has had this positive experience. I think for everyone, you know, for the one person that was out, there are many, many more that are closeted and continue to be closeted or quit their teams.
Sure. So where did you go to high school? What state?
So I'm from Pennsylvania, okay. Pennsylvania native, Philly suburbs. It's called Bucks County. I went to Central Bucks West High School.
And what was the environment like there?
You know, everyone was really, you know, I didn't really run into any overt harassment or anything like that because I think I had a really strong group of allies. So I really had a lot of allies, and people were nice to me. I think they were a little shocked and surprised, but no overt, you know, negative behavior toward me. But it was also, you know, a lack of people, I think, that were actually out. So I think I was sort of always, I was very excited for college because it was going to be in a city, and I knew that there was a strong LGBT community at the University of Pennsylvania. So I was very excited to, you know, have some more diversity at college.
Okay, so that was an important point that you just made about knowing that there was a visible LGBT community. Did you do that as part of your research and where you were going to go to college?
I definitely knew that I wanted to go to a college that had a inclusive environment. And I definitely did my research, but I also did my research because I knew that I wanted to be on the track team. And when I went on my recruiting visits, I definitely looked for signs if the team culture was one that seemed inclusive and tolerant and supportive, even if no one was out, if it was a space where I could be out. And when I went on my recruiting trips to Penn, I definitely found some people who, you know, talked about having gay friends, and just all the signs pointed to that it would be a safe place for me to come out.
Right. So how did you tell your friends and your teammates, and how did that all go?
So when I came out to my teammates in college, I started with a very wonderful friend of mine named Kelly. And Kelly and I were, you know, she was the one I was closest to as a freshman coming on the team. We had a lot in common, and I felt safe talking to her. I actually did it over Instant Message back when people used AOL Instant Messenger. And, you know, I was just telling her. And I brought it up. I think dating someone sort of makes it a little bit easier in some respects, because you can say, you know, I'm dating so-and-so, and you don't necessarily have to declare your sexual orientation, because a lot of people, you know, don't want a label or aren't sure of their label yet. And, you know, me being bisexual, I often get put into the category of lesbian. So for me, I prefer, you know, if I'm dating someone, it makes it easier to say, you know, I'm dating Cynthia. This is just who I'm with, and I'm with a girl, and it's not necessarily so much this larger declaration of this is my identity for life.
Talk about some of the differences that you've seen in the experience of men versus women in college athletic programs.
I think a really important thing to acknowledge that I've talked to many, many people about, and people have shared with me their experience as well, is that, you know, sports essentially is divided by, you know, the gender binary of men in one category and women in another category. And I think that what people don't realize is that how much sexism plays into so much of this. You know, when a guy who's getting yelled at by a trainer or coach is called, you know, a sissy, or is called the F word, or is, you know, made a derogatory comment, it's not necessarily saying it's because he's gay, sexual orientation, it's because he's weak, it's because he's, you know, feminine. And I think that, you know, sexism and the way that that plays itself out sometimes, I think, makes it harder for men in some respects to be out. On the other hand, I think homophobia affects women's teams in different ways. There's the stereotypes of women who play sports as lesbians or manly. And I think that that also really negatively impacts straight athletes who are, say, women who want to play sports, but they don't want to be perceived as, you know, a lesbian or, you know, made fun of or something like that. So I think that what the larger conversation too is how homophobia and sexism really impacts straight people too. And that's it makes it so it's an unsafe environment where people can't feel free to be themselves regardless of their sexual orientation or their gender identity. You know, if someone doesn't feel comfortable as their gender at birth, it's also a difficult thing in the sports world when it's so male-female. And that's the, you know, deciding factor in essentially your professional sport career.
Right. Give us a sense of how college and university organizations view LGBT athletes as opposed to peers on the team. Are organizations truly supportive of LGBT athletes, or do you think there's a little bit of lip service going on?
What type of organizations do you mean?
Well, the college or university establishment itself. Penn State, for example. Do you think that the administration, the organization at Penn State, would be as supportive of LGBT athletes and their programs as the peers on the team?
I think that, you know, a lot of people have discussed sort of the, I think what plays into a lot of difficulties now, but a lot of exciting things at the same time is, and people talk about this all the time in terms of gay marriage is the generational divide. So GO athletes is LGBT student athletes representing ourselves, or former LGBT athletes and allies. And, you know, it's been shown that younger generations are really ready to be out, and not only ready to be out, but ready to talk about it. And I think that there's an old paradigm that, you know, athletic departments and coaching staff, and it's sort of that don't ask, don't tell mentality, except for, you know, sort of in the sports world, where you don't really talk about it. You know, if someone's, you might think that they're gay, you know, you don't talk about it because I think there's a notion that it would somewhat disrupt team culture. And I think what coaches and athletic departments and administrations don't realize is that more and more people are coming out at earlier ages, and athletes are ready to be out. And I think the past few years with the LGBT movement really taking off, and this LGBT sports movement also sort of taking off more so with it, people more and more are ready to be out. And I think that there's a divide in terms of maybe institutional ideas about how to deal with these policies and sort of what the student athletes are ready for. And I think that it's slowly starting to meet somewhere in the middle, where I think athletic departments and administrations are realizing it's in their best interest to really name and promote safe spaces. But I think it takes a little bit longer, I think, to reach the athletic department before it reaches, you know, the general college campus. And I think that that's what's so important about the work that we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it seems like all of a sudden there is a flurry of attention from the professional sports world. Mm-hmm. This last month there was a professional boxer who's currently boxing who came out.
Right, Orlando Cruz.
Orlando Cruz. What influence do you think this professional sports world is going to have on college athletics as hopefully more professional athletes come out?
I definitely think that we need more role models. And I think that there's now a really big push to get professional athletes to come out and be out. And you can see that definitely by the campaigns and, you know, people doing It Gets Better videos. There's been movements and organizations starting up really trying to promote out professional athletes. And, you know, I remember when I was in high school, part of the reason why I think I was so afraid to come out to my teammates was that I had never heard of a professional lesbian, let alone bisexual female athlete. You know, I never heard of anyone who had done that. So kids, young people, we all need other people to look to. And there have been pioneers that have come before us that have tried to do this work, have tried to encourage people to go out. But, you know, it's very difficult. Former NFL player Wade Davis has made it a point to, you know, really publicly come out after his career. But, you know, to have someone come out now, I think it's starting. But, you know, in, say, football or baseball and basketball would be really huge for the movement. And we have some great allies right now. We have great allies on the professional sports teams that are, you know, standing up and saying that they're ready to be allies and that they would be fine with having an out player. But I think it says something about the culture of sports that we're still waiting. I think that it's going to come soon. I'm optimistic, but, you know, we're still waiting for more professional athletes to be out.
Right. So tell us about this organization you formed, OutSports.
Oh, so the organization, it was formerly known as Our Group, and it was actually formed before I started working with them in 2008 by current student athletes, and they sort of realized, you know, there's no network. There's no way that we can connect with each other. I believe that they all met at a Creating Change conference, and they realized this need, and so they started Our Group in 2008. I was currently at Penn, and I was working with a group called PATH, which stands for 10 Athletes and Allies Tackling Homophobia. And that was formed in 2003 by a good friend of mine, Paul Farber, who was actually on the track team, but ended up quitting because he didn't think he could be out on his team. And that's why the organization started. It was actually the first student LGBT athlete task force in the nation. Outsports.com did a thing on it when Paul started the organization. So I was doing work on my college campus. And when I graduated, the members of this network invited me to join. And, you know, we've been working together for a couple years. We've been going out, doing panels, hosting events, doing speaking, but more so as individuals. And I think that we've rebranded ourselves, and now our new name, we just relaunched literally 2 months ago, is called Go Athletes, which stands for Generation Out Athletes, because we really feel the need to represent ourselves, and that, you know, now is the time for many generations, that future generations, to be out. It's time to go. So that's sort of what our new name and logo symbolize, is this sort of shift in the movement and how younger generations are really ready to be out.
Great. Give us a sense of how large the organization is. You have a website, obviously?
We have a website. It's www.goathletes.org. It talks about, you know, a more in-depth description of our history, what we do, who we are. You know, so our network is, you know, growing each day. We try and get stories. And basically, you know, our mission is to empower others to be out, and also to educate allies.
And if you missed that website, we'll have it on our own website at outbeatyouth.com. Anna, thanks so much for spending your Sunday night with us and sharing your story and all the great work you're doing.
Well, thanks so much, Greg.
And that wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember to follow us all month long for the latest news and information for LGBT youth on MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter. And our shows are always available for download on iTunes and, of course, from our own website at outbeatyouth.com. And that also means our time is up for Outbeat Now. Jeff and I will be back next month on the fourth Sunday of November with more on the legal aspects of marriage and family and a live performance by Jason Phillips, an up-and-coming singer-songwriter who's currently attending college at UC Davis. Join us next Sunday night on Outbeat Radio for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer. We'll leave you tonight with a little bit more from Bobby Joe Valentine's new CD. Here's Gunshot. Have a great week, and thanks for spending your Sunday night with us.
I lost the world the day she left, and I will never find a girl like that. One who looks like stars and sunsets. I never thought that souls could bleed, but when she came at me with words like arrows, she wounded mine like you would not believe. But here you are, and your smile is warm, like sunshine in my storm. The trigger's pulled and I'm coming out like a, I'm coming out like a, I'm coming out like a gunshot. I'm coming out like a, I'm coming out like a, I'm coming out like a gunshot for you. When you came into view, my first thought was I do not deserve you. The nature of dreams is not to come true. And then I turned away, but I could feel your eyes like burning embers, lighting up my darkest day. And here you are, and your smile is bright, like moonlight on my night. The trigger's pulled and I'm coming out like a, I'm coming out like a, I'm coming out like a.
And our congratulations to the San Francisco Giants on their World Series sweep of the Detroit Tigers tonight with a 4-3 win, making them world champions once again. You're listening to KRCBFM Windsor, Santa Rosa. News, arts, and ideas where you are. On the air at 91.1 and 90.9 FM. Streaming worldwide at krcb.org. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.
There is a darker part of me. Said that after hurt you, love was over. And my heart could never be free. But you caught me off guard. You said hello and blow by friendly blow. You knocked me out and won your way into my heart.